take the point, 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 take the point. Welcome everybody to the week 3 Take the Points College Football Podcast. My name's Tom Zalesnak. I'm here with Dan Partridge and Ryan Spillett. This is not the greatest week of games ever, but do not fear because we have some very good segments coming up, including a very good matchup in our greatest teams of our lifetime bracket. 96 Florida with Danny Werfel faces off against 99 Florida State with Peter Warwick. That's going to be one heck of a matchup.
Wow.
So let's start by recapping week 2 quickly. The big game was Oklahoma 31, Ohio State 16. Maybe not the most exciting game, but it was all worth it to see Baker Mayfield throw that flag down on the 50-yard line of Ohio State, which would have been a huge dick move, except it was against Ohio State, so I loved it.
Agreed.
Dan, what do you think?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, there's two sides to that. Yeah, I guess it's a little overboard, but if you hear some of the things that I guess the Ohio State fans were saying to him on the sideline, and they got kicked out of the game and got a little personal, some family things, and they actually looked some things up. So, you know, whatever. Their kid's having a football game. Who cares if flag goes in the middle of the field? If you're upset about that, you got problems in your life.
I am not upset about it, by the way. I'm not trying to go all Joe Buck on you.
You can come to any football stadium you want in the country and put a flag. I don't care. You can come to Heinz Field and do it. You can do it. It's a flag. Just a flag.
Dan, did you ever do that at the UConn football field when you used to play flag football there?
No, never tried to place a flag on the field. Did try to storm the field the last game until the police pepper sprayed everyone, but at least we made pardon the interruption. That happened.
That was good. You got pepper sprayed, and it was not at a Dave Matthews concert.
No, thank God.
That's a Connecticut record.
Yes.
Ryan, did you watch the game? What are your takes? I know there were 4 big games going on all on Saturday night. So what did you follow? What are your takeaways? What did you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I watched that game. I thought it was, in general, it was a good Saturday. A lot of fun games, a lot of action. A couple of real boring games kind of earlier in the day, but those night games really helped and picked it up. But yeah, I mean, Ohio State, Oklahoma, either way, someone's going to leave with a loss, and that's good. Those are definitely probably my 2 least favorite teams in college football. So, but even with that, I was still able to watch the game, enjoy the game as a football fan. And, you know, that's kind of always what you're looking for. So even though I don't like either team, it was an entertaining, fun game.
Is it time to end the JT Barrett era?
Yeah, absolutely. I do. I mean, look, you get shut out in a playoff game for the Ohio State University. You want to talk about all the pride and everything. And then you come out against Indiana and look horrible in the first half. And now you just get worked by Oklahoma, who does not have an elite defense whatsoever. It's a Big 12 defense. They always send a couple guys to the pros, but it's not anywhere near the top 30 or 40 probably, or maybe whatever. It's not elite. And I know Ohio State, as you know, they always have 4 quarterbacks there. Just a few years ago, they played 3 of them. 2 of them came out of nowhere, and they all seemed to work out just fine. There's a reason why there's so many players on a college team. Give someone else a crack. Sorry, JT. Clearly, he's not winning a national title for Ohio State this year. They're not beating Alabama how they are now. It's not about just winning right now. Like, it's impossible for this team to improve enough where they can win a national title. But they have enough talent everywhere else, and Urban Meyer as a coach can get it done too. So, sorry. Hit the road, Jack. Next up.
Don't you think, based on being a captain for 3 years, and this is his 4th year playing, he helped them win that national championship? At least he played a critical role. He was a Heisman favorite his freshman year. He led them to the playoff last year. He hasn't been a world beater, but he's been good. Hasn't he earned the right to start and stay a little while longer? Spillett, you're shaking your head.
No, and here's the reason why. Because in college, it's the system is what matters. It's not the players. In the NFL, it's the players that matter. Where in college, it's all about a plug-and-play system. Every coach has their system. Yep. And that's why Cardale Jones was able to walk in from the third string and win a national title, because he just plugged into the system. The problem that they have is they have a first-year new offensive coordinator. And obviously Barrett is not fitting into the system that he runs, so they need to find someone else. And like Dan said, they probably have a half a dozen four-star or higher quarterbacks on the roster. They need to at least give one of those guys a look. You know, they have a couple cupcakes in the near future, so you know, this is a great opportunity. I think Meyer's one of those guys. It's just he's real loyal, and I could see him honestly probably relieving the offensive coordinator of play calling before he benches Barrett.
That's interesting. I like that.
I'm of two minds about it, because I feel that Barrett has earned it, and I do feel like some loyalty is desired. The second stringer is a freshman quarterback who I have heard him compared to Deshaun Watson, but you know how that goes. Like, every freshman is the next greatest player of all time. So who knows about that? On the other hand, Take the Points does our annual Take the Points awards at the end of this season, or at the end of every season. And we have one award in particular, Ryan knows where I'm going with this, called the Zach Mills Award, for the quarterback who started his career amazing and consistently got worse. And it's early. It's only week three, but I think we have a solid front runner and nearly a lock for that award. So JT Barrett, not great. I agree. They're not winning a championship with him. On the other hand, he's earned the right, in my opinion, to start at least a few more games. And also, he's not the only problem. Their receivers aren't great. J.K. Dobbins is a great player. Their defensive line is good. Their linebackers are all right. Their secondary really wasn't that good. I think Barrett's not the only problem. So I would at least see how he does against Army. Maybe give the other guy two drives. Give him a chance. Fair enough. No?
I'd start him, but that's just me.
They'll keep starting Barrett, but they got to give the other guys way more opportunity.
Have to. What's the point? You're wasting a full year of just, you know, amazing talent. They're all there. You can't do that. Too short of a window, especially Urban Meyer, because you know he's only going to be there like three more years max. So keep that in mind, too.
One more thing, and Dan, we've talked about this in the past. When you have a group like Ohio State has of super young new receivers, those guys never passed with Barrett last year when they were all freshmen and sitting the bench behind the starters. No, they were playing with the younger guys. So sometimes when you go to that backup quarterback, you might get that spark because he actually has a relationship with those young receivers because they develop together on the second string and third string. You know, you see it all the time, and even in the NFL where a backup quarterback comes in and all of a sudden his number one target's like the second tight end, because that's his boy in practice. So, you know, that's the other thing that I think would be an advantage for Ohio State to give the young quarterbacks a chance, is they probably have a better relationship with these young receivers.
I like that.
All right, fair enough. I will reassess my thoughts on this, and we'll check in next week. We'll have JT Barrett watch. We'll decide when two of the three Take the Points hosts are totally out on him. I'm 50% out. So we'll let everybody know when we're all 100% out. Talking now about another underwhelming quarterback, Dan, your boy Jared Stidham, not too good.
I told you that he was not going to be good. And
this was your favorite guy a few years ago at Baylor. You thought he was going to be the next Dan Marino.
He went on the road to, like, Oklahoma and won. Like, people don't realize that. Like, Auburn didn't just inherit a guy who was at Baylor and had some talent. He went to Oklahoma and won as a quarterback. That's a big freaking deal. But the SEC is just a whole nother thing. And then Clemson's D-line is a whole nother thing to the SEC, because their defense is better than anybody in the whole country. So what happened was a perfect storm, as called here exactly on Take the Points. Low-scoring game. I mean, Auburn couldn't move the ball. They went to just a, a very simple, basic offense, just trying to basically run the ball up the middle. Like, it was old school. Maybe we can get 4 or 5 yards here, bang home a couple field goals. But every, you know, I mean, sometimes it worked for a first down or two, but not on the, you know, long haul. So Auburn looked bad against Clemson. They're going to need some more time. Clemson's just amazing on defense. They're freaks. Like, that front seven is really, really, really good. They're up there with, like, even the best Alabama ones over the past 10 years. So that's what you saw on Saturday. Man's league.
Are you writing Auburn off for this year?
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're clearly not going to win a national title. I didn't think they were to begin the year. They were a cool pick because, you know, like LSU, if they get great quarterback play out of left field, then they, of course, can win it all. But, you know, Auburn will be Auburn. They're going to win 8, 9, 10 games or so, and they'll be fun, and they'll be competitive, and they'll be favored in most of them. But they're not going to win a national title this year. I don't see Cam Newton back there. I don't know why they didn't recruit Cam Newton's brother. We should talk about that. That's a whole other story.
Oh, I got some things to say about him, too.
He's so good. So, yeah, there you go.
So I want to thank these teams because each week Dan picks a total of the week, and his total for last week was the under bet for this game, which I believe was 54. And as you can see, 14-6. Not even close. I actually took it a step further and I doubled up, Dan. I did a first half under bet and a full game under bet, and both came in very easily. So thank you for providing me with a very good sportsbook account week.
And thank you for no points the last 27 minutes of the game. That's always great when you bet an under. Good job.
Anybody have thoughts on Georgia Notre Dame 20-19?
Close game, really even teams. Those are both, you know, exactly what each team is. They're about a 15th, 18th ranked team in the country. Both got a lot of talent. There's some NFL guys. There's some lapses. There's some coaching snafus. And then you end up with 20-20. Basically, it was a push.
I got some things to say. First of all, I'm the only one on this podcast that picked Georgia.
You did.
I picked Georgia both weeks. I've been the number one Georgia fan this season. And guess what? They're probably going to win the SEC East. So
hold up, my friend.
Take the points preview show, bring in the hot takes, getting some winners.
Okay. All right. I'd like to challenge that. I'm throwing the red flag on you because number one, uh-oh, I picked Georgia with the points. I didn't necessarily know if they were going to win, but I took them with the points and I have a sportsbook slip to prove it. And as with all my choices, there's a sportsbook slip to prove it. Also, I don't remember where I was going with this. What was your second part of that?
SEC East.
Oh, right. I don't think they're going to win, and we'll get to that later.
Ooh.
There's some competitors.
There's one competitor, only one, and it is not the one you would have thought before the season, but there's one other legit
team. It's the one
with
the good medical school.
It's the one with the coach that we have been somewhat harsh on for 5 years on Take the Points.
Oh, no, no. I disagree. Uh-oh. I will stay harsh on him when you bring that up. There's a different team that's going to challenge him.
All right. I'm teasing this. We're going to wait till later in the episode.
Good, good.
USC Stanford. I only watched a little bit of this. Darnold looked pretty good. USC's run defense scares me a little when they play a team that's a little bit better at running. Anybody think that – does anybody disagree with the assertion that USC is the best team in the Pac-12?
I'm going to say they are the best team in the Pac-12, but I am 100% sure they're not going to win the national title. I will tell you that right now.
Why do you say that?
They're very, very possibly going to make the playoffs, but that team is not – all the way USC, what people remember 10, 12 years ago. They're not even close. Like, those teams would have beat the crap out of the squad. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with Sam Iam, because he is the absolute truth, and he's going number one. He started the game perfect. He was throwing balls all over the field. We saw the highlight. I mean, he's amazing, but not enough defense, not enough just experience. They'll be a great team, and they'll be the most exciting football team in California this year, probably. But,
Ryan, any thoughts on that game?
I mean, USC was just clearly better. Just flat out. in every phase of the game, offense, defense, special team, they were just flat better, and Darnold is definitely the truth.
Darnold, in my opinion, is the number one quarterback. And I know there's going to be a lot of debate throughout the year with Rosen and Baker Mayfield. And just in terms of a college guy, Baker Mayfield probably has as big of an impact on his team. But when you talk about just pure skill and who should be, yeah, Mason Rudolph too, but pure skill, who should be the number one draft pick, who's got the most promising future, there's no question in my mind, Sam Darnold's the most sure thing out of all those guys.
He looks like an NFL quarterback already. He's probably like the most NFL ready since Luck, I guess we'd say. I mean, he's pretty similar, you know. I mean, Andrew Luck was a freak of nature when he was at Stanford, but yeah, he's can't miss, number one pick, and we'll know his name for a long time, I think.
It's scary to think that he's only played what, 10 games total in his career.
Yeah, something like that.
I don't know when he started.
11 starts now, yeah.
Yeah, 11 starts. So think about how good he could be by the end of the year. That's why I hesitate to say anything definitive about USC in terms of a playoff. You know, I assume that they're going to improve throughout the season, so we'll see. Two other games I wanted to mention. Did either of you watch the Iowa-Iowa State game? That was the one good early game. Outstanding finish.
Pieces of it. A little bit here and there.
I mean, it was classic college football. Like, there was shitty play on both sides that resulted in a game that was way more exciting than any NFL game.
Great. Yeah, it was, for sure. No doubt.
And then one play in particular that, if people haven't seen it, they've got to look it up on YouTube. This was Louisiana Tech. They had an 87-yard loss on a second down. It was a fumble that went backwards and kept getting kicked and not scooped up. 87-yard loss, which set them up for 3rd and 93, which is something I have not seen before in my life.
But that was pretty wild.
Spot. As a play caller there, you got your options limited.
Yeah, Dan, what play do you run on a 3rd and 93?
Well, I'm from Pittsburgh, so we're just going to run a old halfback draw. No matter what the down and distance is there, anything over 13, it's a draw, Tom. It's 13-plus on the play chart. Thank you.
Dan, if your favorite quarterback of all time, Cordell Stewart, was playing, and it's 3rd and 93, now, 93 is about what Cordell throws through for in a game. Usually 30 of 35, 93 yards, 5 interceptions returned for touchdowns.
Correct.
So do you just, like, throw the ball into the stands? Do you just take a knee?
I would do – you know what I would just run? I would get Cordell and Michael Westbrook and just run the triple option, because that's your best bet, really, of one of those two guys – of just running all the way down the field together, and maybe Cordell pitches at 30 yards downfield. It's a long option.
See, I thought you were going to say throw a Hail Mary to Westbrook, but that gets you about half of the yardage back. So imagine throwing a Hail Mary, you somehow miraculously catch it, and then it's 4th and 47.
Can't believe I misspoke. I meant Rashawn Salaam, clearly, guys. My fault. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, Dan, I've got some bad news for you.
Westbrook is involved as well.
Yeah.
Moving on.
All right, folks. Let's get into the lines, unless anyone has anything else to say about week two. No?
Let's do it.
Cool.
Nope.
All right, we're going to start right with the big game. The Clemson Tigers, number 3 in the country, travel to Louisville. And they take on the former Heisman Trophy winner, Lamar Jackson, who looked really great last week. This is the game of the week, 3:30 p.m., Clemson -3, over under 56. Dan, let's start with you. How do you see this one shaking down?
This is a very, very, very interesting game. This is pure offense against pure defense. Two outstanding head coaches. You got experience, Heisman Trophy winner on one side. You got national championship experience on the other. I mean, what else can you really look for? Well, we're going to look at a little history. Last year, the game was very close. Field goal game, roughly. This year, I think we're looking at more of the same. After watching that Clemson offense last week, I don't know that if they get down early, that they'll be able to come back. But they were playing the Auburn defense, which was superior to Louisville. So
that's a top 10 defense.
That is correct. So I think Clemson moves the ball, I think Clemson moves it okay, and they score in the mid-20s. The question is, can Lamar Jackson score in the mid-20s on Clemson again, 2 years in a row? I'm going to say no. I'm going to say Clemson wins a low-scoring game, something like 22-19.
Your pick, then, would be a stay-away, since the line is 3.
There you go.
The under.
Under is the play in this game, for sure.
Okay. Ryan, take it away.
No, I totally agree. I have nothing really to add to that. That was it's exactly what I would say, something real low, 23-20, something like that, and the under is the play.
I guess I have a different opinion. I'm very torn on this game, and I don't have a strong lean either way, but I'm going to go out on a limb with this one because it is the year of Go Hard is our slogan for the year, Go Hard. All right, so I'm going hard right off the bat. Clemson, their offense did not look good. And yes, it was against a top 10 defense, but I've seen Louisville's an okay defense. I mean, it's not Kent State. They can play. So I'm thinking Clemson scores around 20, 22 points. I think that sounds just right. Now, can Lamar Jackson score 25, 30 points on Clemson? Well, he did it last year against a defense that was pretty similar to the one that we're playing now. And this game's at home, and he's going to have revenge on his mind. And after being told all week last week that North Carolina was a trap of the week and that they were going to keep it close, what does he do? He comes out, by us, including our podcast, he comes out and runs all over them. So, Dan, my first, this is my first big upset pick of the year. Lamar Jackson wins the game by 3, 26-23. Louisville wins. Louisville jumps into, I'm going to say, 5th or 6th in the ranking next week. And they're immediately considered, a playoff contender. They're considered the favorite in the ACC. Lamar Jackson back on top of the Heisman race. Louisville, go Cards.
Very possible.
Oh, also, I have one thing to say, too, and then you can go. The most important thing, freshman quarterback, first big road game. So that's the thing I meant to mention up front. So Kelly Bryant has looked great so far, but he's been playing at home, and he's been playing against Kent State, and then he played an anemic Auburn offense, and he only scored 14 in that game. So I do think Clemson will have success running the ball, but if I bet Louisville and Clemson's defense plays outstanding and they win a game by 3 or 4 points, then I can say, all right, you know what? I was wrong, but my logic made sense. If I pick Clemson to shut down Lamar Jackson and then Lamar Jackson scores 6 or 7 touchdowns, I'm going to feel like an idiot because, oh, right, he's the best player in college football from last year. So I'm going with my instinct. I'm going with Louisville.
That kind of feeds on my last point to add is this is a weird game where Louisville has a chance. I mean, it's a small chance, but there's a chance that they hammer Clemson and they beat them by 35 and Clemson's offense, just has a bad game and they are awful. However, there's probably not a chance of it the other way. There's almost no chance that Clemson blows out Louisville, which is weird when you consider Clemson's the favorite. So very strange game. Hard to pick a side, again, under for me. But if I had to go with a side, your argument's pretty good there, Tom.
All right. Tennessee, Florida. I'll hand this over to you guys. I want to just say, even though they say the game's happening, I do think there is still a slight chance. We're recording on Tuesday night. I think there's a slight chance this game doesn't happen. So I don't want to invest too much of my own mental energy in picking this one. So therefore, I'll turn it over to you, Dan.
Real quick, before I go into this game, I will let you know, if you ever make a wager on a game and it gets canceled, you get your money refunded. If you put a game in a parlay, say you bet all the Major League Baseball games tonight, you put it on in a parlay with the Florida game, and you lost a few, and that game gets canceled, you get your money back still, even though you already lost games. So anyway, that was a quick little gambling tidbit backdoor for everybody. Back to this game. What the hell, man? These two teams are pathetic for who they are. This is Tennessee. This is Florida. They should be powerhouses of the SEC. They should be in the top 10 every year, at least one of them. They each haven't been good in about, ooh, I don't know, 8-10 years each, really. Tennessee really hasn't been good in 20 years. Butch Jones is horrible. Florida's a mess. They can't score points. I don't know who's going to win this damn game. I don't know if they're going to play this game, but I do know they're not scoring 50 points. Therefore, total of the week, under 49.5, Tennessee, Florida.
Dan, I love where your head's at. I totally agree. That is the under of the week. I don't think either of these teams can score. I also think that, with that being said, the obvious, one thing to keep in mind of why I like this under so much beyond the weather and all that is both these coaches right now are sitting on some hot seats. Yeah. And I think the hotter the seat, the tighter they tend to get. And when they get tighter, their teams get tighter. And that's where you see a lot of mistakes, a lot of sloppy play. I think these teams are going to continue to get worse as the chatter about their coaches gets louder.
I'm with you guys on the under. I didn't like these teams offensively to begin with. Florida's got an okay defense. Tennessee's got an okay offense. Those might counteract each other. Florida cannot score. I mean, they're not going to contribute much to this total. I think Tennessee wins it 20-17, something like that. So I'd take the under. I take the points with Tennessee. I think they cover, if not outright win. Again, I'm not sure this game's even going to happen. I mean, roads are blocked. Things are flooded. There's gators walking around campus the lake is flooded and the gators have come out of the pit. It's some like seventh circle of hell shit down there. So if it happens, I'll lay a small wager with Tennessee. Dan?
One last point. If this game, you know, is questionable, if it should be played or not, there's only one person who should really make the call if they could play or not. So
Spurrier?
Call up the old ball coach. He'll tell you for playing this damn foosball game on Saturday or not.
For our listeners, you can begin to get excited because our greatest teams of the week bracket, our ongoing running thing we've been doing all season long, we will be talking about 96 Florida later on, and there's going to be lots of Steve Spurrier talk. So get ready.
Oh.
Take the points. All-time favorite coach, I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's up there.
All right, consensus pick then, the under 49.5 for that game. Texas, Tom Herman travels to USC. We just talked a little bit about USC. They are a 15-point favorite, over under 67. It's an 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time game. So I guess let's start with Texas. Do they have any weapons or any tools where they can actually compete in this game?
Not really. However, this kind of game is very dangerous for USC because they have everything to lose and nothing to gain. People know Texas isn't a great team. You know, I mean, I think USC, if they go undefeated, will, you know, make the playoff regardless of margin of victory. But at the same time, you never want to play Texas close. But for Herman and Texas, everyone expects them to go there and get woodshedded. So if they play them close or pull an upset, man, if they pulled an upset, that could really, like, literally kickstart the entire program, like, incredibly. So be careful. I am going to stay away from this game, but I know it's the year of going hard. If you got to bet it, I'll take the 17 in Texas.
Dan, I disagree. Lay it. Not only is this the year of going hard, this is the year of sucking to get elite quarterbacks. So, after that impressive performance last week and that awful, awful McCown performance for the Jets, don't worry, Dan. They don't give a damn. They want Sam I Am.
Add that to the list.
I'm clapping.
And they're going to win by 30. This is going to be ugly. This is going to be like 47-23.
Very nice. So for those who missed last week, we launched our Failin' for Allen Buffalo Bills campaign to get Josh Allen. Now the Don't Give a Damn for Sam for the Jets.
Don't Give a Damn for Sam is excellent.
I like that. I've been trying to think of something that rhymes with Darnold all week, and I failed. I like your outside-the-box thinking, Spillett. Good work.
I told you guys I would come up with something good. Don't worry. There's more to come. Dan knows that I'm going deep into the quarterbacking situation around college and NFL.
I would like one of these every week. I would like this to be a new segment. So I guess I'm going to pick an opinion that's somewhere in the middle of what both of you said. I'm with you, Dan, in that I'd be a little bit worried about Texas, which is a big-time program. Those players have pride, even if they don't necessarily have the talent to match up. Also, USC's run defense, although their team has played well, the run defense has been their one weakness. It was a weakness against Bryce Love and Stanford, who was the one real bright spot for Stanford. And it was a weakness against Western Michigan in week one. Western Michigan actually successfully ran pretty well in that game. So Texas, if they have one thing they do decently, it is the run game. So they actually match up well, sort of. So what I'm predicting is, and this is where I agree with Ryan, I'm predicting a 17-point USC win, but get ready to sweat it out, because this is going to be one where they are up 12, 14, 10 points for the majority of the game, even in single digits. And then Darnold's just going to throw a touchdown with like 3.5 minutes left that puts them up 17, and that'll be the end. And if you're a USC fan or you lay it with USC, don't get comfortable. Get ready to sweat it out for pretty much the whole game. Moving along, let's do a quick speed round with a few games. Air Force at Michigan, Michigan minus 24.5. Dan, what are your thoughts?
Actually, I want to hear what you guys say about this one first.
I don't care.
See, this is tough. I need your advices on this one. This one's really tough for me.
It's a stay away, but if we're going hard, I guess I would lay it. I wouldn't trust Air Force on the road in the Big House, even though I'm not a big believer in Michigan at this point early in the season. I do think they'll get better as the season goes along.
Absolutely, because they have a lot of new, players who are starting for the first time.
And then they have a quarterback controversy on their hands.
They might. They.
I'm rethinking this. Air Force.
There you go. Yeah, you know what? I'm taking Air Force because Cincinnati's horrible. And Michigan was way too close last week. I mean, that's case in point for your USC-Texas right there. Is that exact similar situation. A team that's, Cincinnati's not Texas, but they're semi-okay, So, and it's an Ohio-Michigan thing, So, anyway, I don't know. Michigan looks messed up. Until further notice, fade them.
Absolutely, especially since, it's hard to prepare for a triple option team with 1 week. Like you said, they spent the whole offseason getting ready for Florida. Their pass defense looked great, couple of pick sixes. But Air Force isn't going to throw the ball. So Michigan's advantage of having, an elite secondary is really useless against Air Force. They're going to get tested on the defensive line. And with those young linebackers now, the guys like Taco Charlton are gone. And Jabril Peppers, huge, important guy in the run game, both gone. So I actually like Air Force in this.
Spillett, you have some actual insight there. Why'd you leave me and Dan hanging out there trying to talk ourselves into this on the fly? All right. UCLA at Memphis. UCLA minus 3. Ryan, you go first on this one because you seem to have your shit together for these games.
Well, I actually like this game a lot. I'm looking forward to watching this game. I think this is a candidate for an over. I think this is a candidate for one of the locks of the over. Memphis can't stop anybody, especially in the pass defense. Their pass defense is not good, but they can score. you know, they have some good coaches and they can put up some points. Now, here's the real interesting thing about this game and why I think it's going to be a better game than people think. This game is being kicked off at what time? 11 a.m. Memphis time. They really made sure that they were putting UCLA into a crazy bind. West Coast team playing an 11 a.m. local kickoff. If you're going to play something in this game, you want to try to maybe play Memphis in the first half. But I think in the second half, when things warm up and the teams get going, I think the over is still in play. But I would definitely look at Memphis in the first half if they're getting a good number.
The only problem with that is that the line for the game is 3 currently. Now that could shift. Again, it's Tuesday night as we record. So a first half line, you're looking at 1.5, 2 points. So there's just not enough points in my opinion. But again, I'll stay away from this game. UL Lafayette at Texas A&M. Texas A&M minus 23.5. Who wants it?
Me. Why the hell would anyone bet A&M until further notice? They're a total train wreck. That was pathetic last week, following up their performance after UCLA. They're not even good at all. They are going to get smoked in conference a couple times by 30 points. There will be money to be made early, as soon as they hit that SEC conference, smack in the face. In fact, while you guys talk about this, I'm going to pull up this A&M schedule, and I'll tell you exactly when they're going to get crushed.
All right, well, we'll talk about UConn at Virginia then. Virginia minus 10. My UConn Huskies 1-0. They beat Holy Cross, and then their game last week was canceled against South Florida. So they haven't played. They got a bye week. They're fresh. Virginia is not good at all. As much as I do not like laying points or even taking points or doing anything involving UConn, I think you have to take the 10 in this game if you're betting it. Now, the correct answer is always to stay as far away from UConn football as possible and not bet. But if we're going by the go hard motto, give me the 10. Dan, you want to weigh in? Because the next game's Oklahoma State Pitt, and I know you got thoughts on that.
No, I'm going to let you pick this one. You're the expert in this field.
Okay. Dan made an excellent pick of Oklahoma State to the playoff and Mason Rudolph for the Heisman. That was his sort of big bet before the season. Now, Oklahoma looks great, but besides them, Oklahoma's the next best team or the other team with the best shot in the Big 12. Mason Rudolph looks incredible. Their triple threat of Washington and I forget the running back's name and Rudolph looking great. This game's at Pitt, so I don't think they're going to totally run away with it. But if you're taking a side, I think I'll take Oklahoma State. Penn State beat Pitt by 19, and Penn State didn't really score at will. They settled for a lot of field goals, but they pretty much had the game in hand and they moved the ball. And I think Oklahoma State will have a similar run. They've got a similar offense to Penn State. So give me that same margin of victory, 19 points or so. I'll take the Sooners. No, the Cowboys.
Cowboys.
Oh, man, if any Oklahoma State fans listen, that'll be their last time listening to this podcast.
I saw a guy today at work wearing an Oklahoma State hat, and I said, yes, Mason Rudolph for Heisman. He looked shocked that somebody walked up and said that to him. I'll tell him that much. He didn't know who we ran into.
Get used to it, man. That's going to happen more and more as the year progresses.
I just hope it happens so he can go, remember that random guy in September in Phoenix, of all places, said that? But Oklahoma State's rolling. Pitt's offense is messed up. They have too many new parts. They showed a lot of pride last week against Penn State, but that's their Super Bowl. And now a better offense comes to town, and Mike Gundy's got them playing well. And that defense for Oklahoma State, look out. Playing the best Oklahoma State defense so far. I mean, they haven't played anybody, but they haven't given up those, like, you know, backdoor 27 points that we're accustomed to, which is a good sign. So far, so good. Let's keep it going. I think Oklahoma State's going to do it.
I think this is not even close. I think this line is way off. I think 13.5 is not right. I think this is definitely be closer to, I would put it at probably 19.5. I think Oklahoma State is that good, but no respect. So I would definitely lay it, and I would lay it large.
All right. Dan, do you want to get back to Texas A&M?
Yes, sir. You are reading my mind. The next 3 weeks in a row for Texas A&M are all home games, which is great because that means the point spread's going to be smaller than it should be. Home against Arkansas, South Carolina, and Alabama in a row. Then they go on the road to play Florida. Then they come home for Mississippi State, Auburn, New Mexico at home in a row. So we got 6 out of 7 coming against A&M all at home where that line's going to be messed up. Look out for those coming up for sure. The next couple
Mississippi
weeks.
State's the blowout. That's the one that the net line's going to be like 3.5, and they're going to lose by 38. That's the game.
So what? Oh, where I'm targeting right now. So they're going to win this week, presumably against UL Lafayette, and Arkansas is not great this year. I think they squeak that one out, and then people start thinking, all right, maybe this team's okay. South Carolina, sneaky good. We'll get to them in a little bit. I'm looking at a South Carolina 4.5-point line where South Carolina rolls over them. And then Alabama Shang Tsung's them and steals Kevin Sumlin's soul and is possibly his job.
Set your calendars, folks. Saturday, October 7th, Nick Saban's claiming yet another victim. That's the game. 55-0.
All right, I've got a hot take for this next one. The Baylor Bears and their shell of a football program travel to Duke. Now, folks, you may remember if you're a longtime listener of Take the Points, if you're one of those 7 people who listened since the start, there was a few years ago, I would say 3-4 years ago, I was real high on Duke football. This is when they played Johnny Manziel in a bowl game, and their team was pretty good. Duke's back, baby. They look good the last couple weeks. And Baylor is atrocious. This line is too low. I know the reason they set it at 14 is because nobody's going to feel good laying 14 points with Duke football, but this is wrong. Duke should be favored in this game by 23 points. Duke, Blue Devils, football. Baylor is bad, and if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, but the evidence has shown me so far that Baylor will be lucky to win 2 games this season, if that. Dan, you used to love Baylor. What do you think?
I love our old team in this game. I really like Baylor, and I'll tell you
why.
Oh,
come
on. Wow, you didn't see this coming. Because former University of Arizona stiff quarterback Anu Solomon grad transferred to Baylor and started the first 2 games. Well, guess what? He has been removed and back to the bench. And the guy who Art recruited, despite all his flaws, will be starting at quarterback this week, and he will score in the back door, and he will get within 14, and Baylor will cover to save face and get the hell out of non-conference.
Art Briles is a good recruiter, is going to be like the new version of like, hey, Sandusky was a pretty good defensive coordinator, or like, Hitler really loved dogs.
I'm just saying, Anu is bad, and he cannot play football. So the person who's supposed to be quarterback is actually getting his job back, and he's going to be pumped up.
Anu Solomon, great example of my transfer theorem. He was pretty good his first year at Arizona. Not so much anymore.
He was up for the Zach Mills Award for sure.
Yeah, well, I think JT Barrett's going to sneak in and steal it from him.
He might win it. He lost to Liberty outright as a 40-something point favorite, okay? And then they lost to Texas San Antonio. That's a pretty good rock bottom. JT still might beat Illinois 48-10, but he knew he'd never having those games ever again.
JT was a top 3 Heisman finisher and part of a national championship team, and he's about to lose his job to a freshman who's never played before. So we'll continue this debate throughout the season, but the Zach Mills Award just heated up.
Heated up hot this week. We just picked up on it.
We'll make a mayoral bet on this, Dan.
I have no idea what's going to happen. I have no clue. Like, every possibility is there. Like, what if, like, they're like, okay, we pulled our shit together, Baylor. We won 38-10. Or Duke could win 56-0. Like, any possibility is, this game's wild.
Dan, we'll make a mayoral style bet. You know how we bet and like okay. it's Texas versus USC and you bet like a surfboard versus a cowboy hat. Mm-hmm. If Baylor wins, I'll send you a Baylor gift, which is an envelope full of cash and an alibi.
Thank you.
And if Duke wins, you have to send me a Duke gift, which is a asshole white guy in a blue polo shirt.
Yep.
The FedEx shipping on that's going to be a little more, but we'll work it out.
I'm going to send you 4 polo shirts, and I need you to wear them all at the same time.
Done. Deal. All right, let's move quickly through a few of them. Vatek at East Carolina. East Carolina is exceptionally bad this year. They lost to James Madison, and then they looked terrible last week. So all signs point to Vatek in that, although it is a bit of a high line, so use your discretion.
Lock of the week from my side. This is the game. Absolute lock of the week. Love Vatek in this spot. Love Vatek as a team this year. ECU is atrocious. Zay Jones is no longer their savior. Lay it all.
All right. Well, I'll tell you for certain, you can't bet ECU the rest of the year. I forbid it. So I guess that's the pick. All right, folks. Central Michigan at Syracuse. Syracuse, -10.5. This is the Tom Zeleznak official incorrect line of the week. This is wrong. So Syracuse, they lost by 7 to Middle Tennessee State, and now they're favored by 10.5 over a team that has Michigan transfer Shane Morris at quarterback, who threw for like 400 yards last week. This doesn't make any sense. I know it's in the dome, but Central Michigan's playing all right. Syracuse couldn't handle Middle Tennessee State. I don't see why this line's more than like 3 points. Take the points.
Absolutely, Tom. You know, Syracuse favored by 10.5 points. It's always easy to, you know, wager on these big home favorites. You never know.
That music that you cannot really hear through the monitor, Dan.
Oh, God damn it.
Yeah, we're having an audio issue with that. But that music means it's your trap of the week. So what song were you trying to play?
I'm trying to play 2 Chainz. It's a vibe. But it didn't work out. So, but yeah, that's the trap of the week. You're right. Syracuse shouldn't be favored by 10.5. Central Michigan's frisky. I like them to keep it close. Trap of the week, Central Michigan.
Notre Dame at Boston College. Notre Dame a 13.5 point favorite. Notre Dame loses by a point. Will they be motivated to go in and beat not arch rival, but a team they play constantly, a team where there's a small rivalry? What do you think? Neither of you seem very enthused about this game.
No.
All I want to say is I can't wait for Brian Kelly to get fired. That guy's a dick.
He's the worst.
Oh,
I'm not
so he
any Notre Dame games till he's fired.
Right. So people have probably, by the time you listen to this podcast, everyone will probably have seen the clip. But he came out and he was yelling at a reporter who said, "You lost by one possession." He's like, one point. And then he had to come out and apologize the next day. He's wearing a blazer. And he's like, "I am sorry for the comment that I made. I am making this apology on my own, through no pressure from my agent or publicist. I am very, very sorry." And it's just like, all right, Brian Kelly, you know you're getting fired later this year. We know you're getting fired later this year. We all know it's happening. You should have been fired last year. It's been five or six years since you've been productive there. This line is right on, so I'd stay away from this game. But let's enjoy the Brian Kelly era while it lasts, because I don't think it's going to last. I don't think a year from now we're going to be coming on talking about next year's Boston College game and assessing Brian Kelly's offensive skills.
No.
Wisconsin at BYU. Wisconsin -15.5. Over-under an NFL low 41. What do you guys think? Jonathan Taylor Thomas, the Wisconsin running back, is pretty good. I like him.
Looks like BYU quarterback Taylor Mangum might be injured. Could be looking at a 17th medical redshirt here.
Bring him back.
So that's why it's 41. So there you go. He's out. You know what? Over. 45-0 Wisconsin.
I like it. BYU's bad this year. BYU's very bad for a BYU team. Wisconsin can score this on their own. Speed round. Purdue at Missouri. Missouri -7.5. Dan?
Over. Sorry, Tom. I thought I was going super speed there.
No, go for it.
Over. Purdue's new coach is scoring points. Purdue looks fun. This is actually, if you remember, no one remembers, but last year we actually picked Purdue as a couple picks because they fired their loser head coach and went with this new guy, and we thought that there'd be some energy. It just took to the offseason, and Purdue has actually looked a lot better over the first few weeks. So Purdue, if you saw Missouri, Missouri State, you know there's a lot of points. I like the over.
Purdue's most improved in the Big Ten through 2 weeks, along with Michigan State. Army at Ohio State. Ohio State -30.5. Dan?
Classic Ohio State. They're going to slap their way to 38-0 in cover.
All right. Oregon State at Washington State. Washington State -21. Oregon State, one of the worst Power 5 teams in college football.
That is correct, Tom. This is Week 3's lock of the week. What the hell's going on here? First of all, we're going to take a look at Oregon State, because that's really why we're making this wager. Week 1, they play Colorado State. They give up 58 points and lose by 31. Colorado State then scores 3 against Colorado. Week 2, thanks to a last-second field goal, Oregon State wins over Portland State. And if you go to ESPN.com, you can't even click on Portland State's like team name because they don't have a hyperlink for a team page. So that I had to go to Google and type in the Portland State schedule. So that tells you how good they are. And then 3, last week, Oregon State was laying 2 against Minnesota, which made no sense. And they lost by 34. So let's just recap this. They beat a team that doesn't exist by 3, and they lost to two teams who aren't good by 30 each. Now they're going on the road to play Washington State and Mike Leach, who started off very cold last week against Boise State. Their star-ish quarterback Luke Falk got benched, but as of this morning was renamed the starter for this game. Oh, is there a better team in college football to get healthy against? No, there's not. Luke Falk's going to throw 7 touchdowns on Saturday. 7. And they're going to win 66-10. That's my lock of the week. Washington State is going to absolutely blow the doors off of Oregon State, which, by the way, after they lose this game, they play Washington and then USC. So they're also looking past this game to home games first Washington coming up. So it's even a trap game for Oregon State on top of it. It's all lined up. I will be absolutely shocked if this game's remotely close.
All right, neither of us are going to be able to follow that. So Tulane at Oklahoma, Oklahoma -34. Any chance of a letdown?
Tulane's quarterback's out, no.
All right, and then one more for you, Danny, and then we've got to check in with Ryan on the Fallon for Allen initiative. So, but first, Dan, Colorado State goes to Alabama. The line is 28.5. I found this stat, so this is from SB Nation. Alabama, taking the last 21 games where they were favored by 4 touchdowns or more, they are 6-15 against the spread. So these big spread games, 2/3 of the time, they don't cover. So do we stay away from this? Because we're not betting against Nick Saban.
No. Well, first of all, that is a good stat. But if you just take away that week after the big out-of-conference game, it's about 50-50. And seeing that last week they didn't cover against Fresno, I feel that they will this week against Colorado State. So I will bet Alabama for sure. This could get out of hand.
Dan, you've got deep stats to counteract my original stats. I like
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Well done. All right, Ryan. The Oregon Ducks go to Wyoming. Give me your pick on this game, and then give me the status of the Buffalo Bills' Fallon for Allen initiative, which got off to a rocky start in week 1. Listen, man, the Bills play the Jets. These two teams are tanking for the season, and you win that game, you're setting yourself back a lot.
It's so true.
Don't worry, we get to go to the Jets on a Thursday night game. That's got slop written all over it.
Don't watch it.
No, you know that'll be good because that'll be one of those games where they're like, you know, I don't have DirecTV, so there's not a lot of Buffalo Bills games I can watch via legal methods. And so that'll be one of those ones where they're like, it's broadcasting on Twitter and it's on your LinkedIn stream and you can watch it in 17 places. And I'm all excited because, all right, finally I can watch, easily watch a nice HD Buffalo Bills game. And then 6-5 final. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we don't care about NFL here. So what do you think about the game?
Yeah, so the game itself, love Oregon in this spot. Even though I am the biggest Josh Allen fan out there, I don't think this is a good situation for them. Team's not really hitting their stride yet. I think this is probably the last game before they get into their the meat of their schedule, the conference and stuff like that. But I love Oregon. I've been saying it all year. I think Oregon is a super dark horse team. I love Royce Freeman as a dark horse Heisman candidate. So I definitely would play Oregon big in this game. But with that being said, there's some serious backdoor potential with Allen. He can definitely, you know, if you give him time against the second unit down 20, 25, he could definitely hit some backdoors.
Kentucky at South Carolina, South Carolina -6. We have arrived at my pick to win the SEC East, the South Carolina Gamecocks, and take the points non-favorite Will Muschamp. Dan, how dumb am I for picking Will Muschamp?
Well, if you are that, then I'm an idiot because I agree. So I'm going to go with Will.
All right. Ryan, tell us why we're wrong. Ryan dropped off for a second. Tell us why we're wrong, Ryan.
He got so mad he dropped off the call for a half second.
I couldn't do it. My phone heard good things about Muschamp and it just froze.
Last week, Skype dropped out after we complimented Florida. And then this week it dropped out after we complimented Muschamp. I think there's some sort of Aaron Hernandez curse going around. It's infected Skype.
Don't worry. I'm going to save the podcast and the connection because I will not say anything good about Muschamp. I think South Carolina's not bad. They're a pretty good team. They're not going to score enough points to be SEC East champs. I think it's going to come down to Georgia, as I've been saying, versus Vanderbilt. I think Vanderbilt's the second best team in the SEC East. So, Tommy, when Vanderbilt plays South Carolina this season, I'm excited to make a bet with you because I actually believe in Derek Mason.
All right. I'll send you some coleslaw and pulled pork, and you can send me a banjo. I don't know what South Carolina is famous for.
Send me some saltwater taffy. I'll send you some spicy chicken.
I'll send you a Confederate statue. You send me a banjo. You send me a different Confederate statue.
Yeah. Oh, God.
All right. Moving along. Kansas State at Vanderbilt. Kansas State -4. So, Ryan, you going to pick Vanderbilt outright?
I am picking Vanderbilt outright. Bill Snyder's a tough SOB to beat. But I think I just think they're really good. I think they're a solid team this year.
So let's take a break here, and we'll be back shortly. We're going to talk about the greatest teams of our lifetime bracket. This is the third week of doing it. We've already done 2005 Vince Young Texas beat out Deshaun Watson Clemson in our first week. And then last week, 1995 Nebraska beat out 2004 Auburn. So this week we have a really tough one. It is our 8 seed, 1996 Florida Gators, versus our 9 seed, the 1999 Florida State Seminoles. And we'll break that down in a minute when we come back. All right, folks, we're back. Our matchup today in the greatest teams of all time. You know what? In fact, I'm not even going to say it. I'm going to throw it right over to Ryan Spillett, who's going to explain for you new listeners what we're doing and then tell us who's facing off today.
Thanks, Tom. So, listeners, welcome. Thanks for joining, sticking around to this segment. It is definitely a super fun thing. What we're doing this year is we've decided to go back over the last 25 years of our lives when really we started remembering football and watching it intently and understanding it, and basically deciding to go bracket style from those 25 years, pick the 16 best teams, put those teams into a bracket, and then each week we're going to pick a matchup, discuss what the over-under hypothetically would be, and then talk about our thoughts on what would happen in that game. And throughout the year, we'll keep that bracket going, and we announce the national champion picks. We'll also be announcing the greatest team of our lives.
So who do we have today facing off?
So today we have an exciting matchup. Since we decided early in the season, as we introduced this, to go with some more lopsided games, this week we decided to really turn it up and go with the 8-9 matchup, the 1996 old ball coach led Florida Gators, 12-1 Sugar Bowl champions, versus the 1999 Bobby Bowden led Florida State Seminoles, also Sugar Bowl champions. So really exciting. They were 12-0. Florida was 12-1. This is a super hard game to pick, but I'm excited to break it down and talk about it. And first of all, I just want to go through a few key players. On that 96 Florida team, Danny Werfel, quarterback, Heisman Trophy winner, first team All-American, 3,625 yards and 39 touchdowns on the season. Two wide receivers, both first-team All-Americans in Rydell Anthony, 1,293 yards and 18 touchdowns in 12 games. And Ike Hilliard with 900 yards and 10 touchdowns in 12 games. And Jaquez Green as the third wideout, 626 yards and 9 more touchdowns through the air. Super deep offense on the wide receiver side. On the running backs, you had two running backs going by committee, 106 carries versus 104 carries, so super even. Fred Taylor, Spurrier knew he was fragile Fred back then, couldn't overload him. 650 yards, Elijah Williams, 690 yards. Defense not really loaded with superstars, but I do have to mention a young sophomore named Javon Kearse had a breakout season that year and really turned himself into the freak in that 96 season. One of the reasons he was able to become the freak was due to a first-year defensive coordinator, Bob Stoops.
That's right. That's right.
Ran the defense on that team, which explains why in the SEC title game it was 45-30, was the win over Alabama. And in the Sugar Bowl national title game versus Florida State that year, 52-20. So just a monster blowout performance in a title game. Now going quickly over to 99 Seminoles, Chris Winkie, we mentioned 3,100 yards, 25 touchdowns. Even though they did have a great receiving core led by Peter Warrick, 934 receiving yards, another 100 on the ground, 11 TDs, best kick returner in the game. A young Lavernius Coles, just tough as nails, and a young freshman named Anquan Bolden, who is also getting a lot of time on that team. But the real, real star of that team was actually the running back, Travis Miner, over 800 yards rushing on the season. So that was really their bread and butter. They won the Sugar Bowl over a Virginia Tech team led by Michael Vick, 46-29. Amazing, amazing game. One of the best I remember in my life. Two more things to add about Florida State. Sebastian Janikowski was the All-American kicker. He was a Ray Guy winner, is the number one kicker, and was also left school a year early after that junior year to go pro. Super odd. And then to match Bob Stoops as defensive coordinator, the 99 Seminoles offensive coordinator, Mark Richt. Two take-the-point favorites in their early years facing off in a great game. I'm going to set the line at Gators minus 2.5 gentlemen, what do you got?
Before we talk about line too much or our picks, you mentioned a bunch of amazing stats and players. I wrote down a little, I would call it a recap of how the seasons went, because these were two truly historic or interesting seasons. So I want to go through that quickly and reminisce a little bit. So let's talk about the Florida Gators. They were ranked number 4 in the preseason, and they remained there for 3 weeks. In week 3, they beat Tennessee and a little guy named Peyton Manning, 35-29. They were up 35-6 at half before Manning led a near comeback. After that game, they jumped to number 1. So they remained number 1 through that SEC 9-0 run. And everybody thought, okay, this is the number 1 team. They're going to make it to the national championship game. On November 30th, they played their arch rival, Florida State. They lost that game 24-21. Werfel was sacked 6 times. He threw 3 interceptions. He had no time. After the game, this is a Spurrier quote that we're all going to love. Spurrier said, "If Danny would have had more time, we would have killed them." So classic Steve. And then we'll come back around to that in a second. So the Gators beat Alabama in the SEC championship game December 7th, but still they're ranked 4th in the country. So no championship for them, right? Well, that same week, Texas upsets number 3 Nebraska. And so because of that, Florida gets into the Sugar Bowl matchup where they get a rematch against Florida State. That still doesn't count number 2 Arizona State. So then in their time off, Danny Werfel wins the Heisman. We get to New Year's Day. Earlier in the day, the Rose Bowl, Ohio State versus Arizona State. Arizona State, led by Jake Plummer, is number 2 in the country. Ohio State was trailing. They take the lead with 19 seconds left on a David Boston touchdown. And then they hold on. They stop Jake Plummer on the last drive and hang on. And so number 2 goes down earlier that day. And so now, just as the game, basically as the Sugar Bowl is about to start, we now know this is a national championship game. This is the number 1 team versus the now number 2 team. And what happens? In my opinion, in one of the greatest coaching maneuvers ever, Steve Spurrier switches to the shotgun formation to give Danny Werfel more time, and it works magnificently. Florida wins 52-20. The game's not even close. And just an amazing move by Spurrier, and that's how they win. And after a 52-20 blowout, they're the unanimous number 1. So then we contrast that with 1999 Florida State. They were the opposite. They were ranked number 1 from the start of the season to the end of the season, and they were actually the first team in history to go wire to wire. Dan and Spillett, you'll be interested to know that Arizona was ranked number 4 that year. So it was a different time in Arizona football history, a time that has been long forgotten. Florida State in 99, much like Florida in 96, they had lost the national championship game the previous year, and they were very determined in the offseason talking about how they're going to be the best. We talked about the receiver group, unbelievable. 4 All-Americans, 8 All-ACC first team. Peter Warrick named twice as an ACC first teamer, wide receiver and punt return. They had 7 players from that team drafted, 3 in the first round. Peter Warrick actually was the Heisman favorite early in the season, but of course he lost it to Mr. Ron Dane of Wisconsin. And then quarterback Chris Winkie.
He shoplifted.
Correct. Laburnus Coles got kicked off the team and was a better pro, which is the best. But okay.
And then a couple other interesting tidbits. So they won pretty handily throughout that, so we don't need to go through all the games, but they were the most penalized team in the country, 85 yards a game. Bobby Bowden won his 300th game during this season. It was on October 8th, and if you guys remember who he won it against, it was actually his son, Tommy Bowden of Clemson. So that was the first ever father-son coaching matchup in college football, and it was Bobby Bowden's 300th win, later vacated. But we don't have to worry about that.
All vacations should count. That's the stupidest thing in college sports, but that's a whole other topic.
It really is. And so a couple more things. So they beat Florida 30-23 in November in Gainesville. And what was funny about that is, you know how teams sometimes have like an unofficial motto for each game? The unofficial slogan for FSU for that game going into Florida was "Drain the Swamp."
Pretty good.
It's pretty good. One more little story from this was a very interesting team, if you haven't picked up on that. So you mentioned the win over Virginia Tech. They were up 39-29, and then they had the famous bomb to Peter Warwick that pulled away and put them up 46-29, which is where it ended. I didn't know this until I was doing some research earlier, but apparently right before that play, the crowd was chanting, "Peter Warwick, Peter Warwick." And then in the huddle, Peter Warwick turned to his team and he said, and I quote, "Do you want me to finish them off?" And then next play was the famous bomb. I think it was like 68 yards or something like that, that sealed the game. He was named MVP. So this was a team of immense talent, immense attitude. They were cocky, but they got the job done. So, Dan, where would you set the line for this game, and how do you see it playing out?
God, really super, super, super hard to set a line in total for this game. Well, a couple things. Coaching staff advantage, pretty much a push. I like the old ball coach slightly more than Mr. Bowden. However, Mr. Stoops then downgrades that to a push. So coaching staff is a push. Special teams, slight advantage to Florida State because of Janikowski, but not much. However, they have some history when playing each other, and maybe that overrides talent. All right, quarterback position. Werfel, Winky. Winky, Werfel, same dude, really, to be honest with you. We kind of liked Werfel more because he was the quarterback, but to be honest with you, they performed similar. Winky, I know, is an old man, but they're both guys who are good in college, not good pros. Running backs, very similar. Wide receivers, I'm going to give the slight edge to Florida State because of all the Florida talent. You forget how absurdly good Peter Warwick was. He went to the Cincinnati Bengals, which are a cursed franchise. He went to a real team, he might still be in the league or literally a Hall of Famer. He was, in my lifetime, probably a top three wide receiver I've ever seen. And, you know, like I said, it's just his NFL career, which makes you think that, you know, he wasn't as good as he was. Defensively, I'm going to give a slight lean to Florida State as well. Those Florida teams seem to give up a little bit of too much offense, especially in that year. They did lose a game to Florida State that year as well. So that all being said, man, as much as this kills me to say, Florida State -2.5, total 63.
So you had the Gators at 2.5. Dan, you have the Noles at 2.5. And I had so much trouble trying to figure out who would be favored that I put this at a pick'em. So we're all...
We got a problem.
Yeah, we do got a problem. But the line, I guess, isn't as important. Why don't we skip ahead and break down the game? So, Ryan, why don't you start it off? Who wins? How does it play out? What units do well against what other units? These are two very similar teams.
Very similar. Very similar teams. Running backs that play very similar styles. I think, you know, as much as Dan really loves that Florida State receiving core, and I agree that Warwick was insane and went ninth overall to the Bengals?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, top 10.
Yeah. Well, that Florida receiving duo went 7th and 16th overall.
True.
So, you know, while Florida State had one legit top 10er, Florida actually had two in the top 16. I think that Spurrier is just a little bit better of a coach, as we saw with the adjustment he made going to the shotgun. I just think that Florida's a little bit better and a little bit more athletic, and Florida State's just a little bit undisciplined. I think this game comes down to Florida driving down the field with a chance to win. I think it comes down to who's going to make the last play, and I think that Florida just has too many weapons in a two-minute drill to not get the job done. I like Florida to win the game by 2, and I think the over-under is going to be, Dan, at 63. I actually like a little bit higher at 68.5.
That's probably right, yeah. I think it's a little low, too. You're probably closer.
So I think it's about a 38-36 or something, like 37-35 game, I think sounds about right.
Dan, how do you see this one playing out?
Yeah, a couple things. I mean, I'm kind of enjoying this. Like, I think the only way to figure this out is just to kind of talk this out. I'm going to go Florida State for two words. Michael Vick. They beat him by 17, 18, 19 points or whatever. And I remember watching that game. In fact, I believe all of us watched that game together. And we were all rooting for Vic, going, oh, they're going to do it. But we're like, yeah, but Florida State's a powerhouse. But Vic's the best we've ever seen. If that defense can do that to Vic, I think they could at least somewhat, not contain, but maybe hold Florida to 28 to 31. I don't know. Their performance in the national title game over Vic is probably the deciding factor for me. I think both offenses are equal. I think you got stud wide receivers, split time running backs, white dude, you know, average-ish quarterbacks, great O-lines. But I think slight defense, Bob Stoops and the Mike Vick factor is the little difference for me. Do you trust Stoops against Peter Warrick and those guys?
Dan, the Mike Vick point is really the thing that really is the number one thing that kind of held me back from going harder with Florida. It's just not only did they contain Vick, they beat Vick in a dome.
On turf.
In a dome is just absurd. I love the fact that both these teams won their titles in the Sugar Bowl, so that's where this game's going to get played, is in the dome in the Sugar Bowl, since that's where they both won their titles that season. Tommy, what you got, man? You got to be the tiebreaker. Dan has a slight Florida State, and I have a slight Gator.
First off, let me say I'm very disappointed in you two for not coming to a consensus and for leaving this on me, because I have never struggled more with a pick in the history of my life, real or fake picks. These teams are exactly even, which is why I put it at pick 'em. First off, let's just talk about what the heart wants. 96 Florida and Danny Werfel is one of my favorite teams and one of my favorite players of all time. And I look back on them super fondly. We were just kids. I think we were 14, 15. Florida State came out just a little bit later. I think we were freshmen in college, so we were just a little bit older, and it didn't have that same kind of emotional resonance to us at that age. You know, we were probably like 8 beers deep at that time and just having a good time, and we weren't like kids like caught up in the passion of Danny Werfel football. Also, the fact that Danny Werfel now has an award named after him, that is the award for the best human in college football, gives him a slight edge from the heart. But when I break down these teams, as much as I hate to do it, the talent level at Florida State seems just a little tiny bit better. They were one wire to wire. They had a better defense, as Dan mentioned. They had the better kicker. God, I hated Chris Winkie. I didn't, for some reason, this is before the era of Tanner Mangum and Taysom Hill, when this guy was like 24. I thought he was somehow cheating the system.
I hate him too. I mean, it's,
I don't
it's
hate,
gross.
Hate's the wrong word, but I didn't feel like he belonged.
No, he was a bust as a Yankee. Danny Werfel was also a scholar All-American that year, by the way. Just want to point that out. He was also the scholar athlete of the year.
Right. He's all around like the greatest human being who's ever played college football. At least definitely the greatest human being to achieve at that level, at Heisman level.
Until Tebow.
That's true. We'll get to him in a future week. So this is really difficult for me, because I see this coming down to a 1-point game. And I think, although Steve Spurrier is my favorite coach of all time, Bobby Bowden is the winningest coach of all time, going by the Tom Z metric, where we don't forfeit any games ever. Oh, I hate to do it. Florida State wins the game by 1 point. 41-40.
I can't believe that we're eliminating our – we all love this Florida team so much. Like, if I had a gun to my head, I'd be like, Florida. But – like, the real logical answer, I really believe slightly, is just the Michael Vick thing. It's just Michael Vick. The way they beat Vick, that's it for me. That's That's the only deciding thing. Florida beat a team who they lost to in the regular season and got lucky because of Arizona State losing. That has to factor into it somewhat.
So, and that's the other thing. Florida actually lost to Florida State, and they needed a little help to just get into the championship game. And although they crushed Florida State again in the championship game, I kept coming back to that, that they lost one game and it was to Florida State, and the 96 Florida State, not as good as the 99 Florida State. I know that's kind of some weird convoluted logic, but when I just break down every position and the coaching, I just feel like Florida State just wins by like 0.02 on each little thing. And I hate this, Dan, because half the reason we started a podcast was just so we could get Danny Werfel to be a guest on the show. So
that's still, and if he's listening and wants to come out, we'll change this fucking pick.
That's
right.
Right.
Now.
Danny Werfel or Peter Warwick, whoever you becomes a guest on the show first, that could affect the decision. Peter Warwick, you call in, you'll win the next round.
Either or. Yeah, that's fine. I will say that this was fun, and going forward, this is going to happen every week. Like, this is going to be a mess going forward. I can't wait. We're going to get frustrated towards the end, too. Like, oh, God.
It's so hard. I can't imagine being more frustrated than I was earlier today trying to break this one down and decide, do I go against my – do I go with the team, the first team ever to go wire-to-wire number one with so many pros, or basically my favorite non-Penn State team of all time? So
I know
it's very difficult, but I think we have to advance Florida State by the slimmest of margins and say goodbye to 1996 Florida. Our first upset.
How about Florida State being 9 in our bracket, by the way?
Absurd.
Well, stay tuned to hear who's ahead of them. You know, one Mr. Tebow's in there, and there's a lot more great, great teams.
Oh, yes. You're going to hear from Tebow and Bush and a whole bunch of fun guys.
There's a lot of good stuff coming up. So if you enjoyed that, tune in next week at the end of the podcast and we'll do another matchup. Any parting shots, gentlemen, for the week?
Parting shots.
Stay safe in the Southeast. Stay safe. Enjoy your football. That is your religion. Just stay inside. Stay safe.
Totally. Parting shot. I'm going to go ahead and say that this was the worst week one of the NFL in the history of the NFL going back to 1967. The level of play could not have been worse. The games on TV were horrible. Seattle, Green Bay, snoozer. Giants, Cowboys, snoozer. Patriots mailed in. Steelers mailed in. There's low scoring games everywhere. Atlanta should have lost to the freaking Bears. I mean, just an absolute travesty of product for a multi-billion dollar company. And hats off to college football. If you compare your week one product against that piece of shit NFL product that came out this past Sunday, again, hats off college football. You are not even close. You're on another level. Bravo.
Are you telling me you did not enjoy the AFC East leading Buffalo Bills?
Yeah, that was a great game. I was actually at work and volunteered to work this Sunday, and Ryan texted me. And of course, I pulled up the ticket in the office the whole day. But Ryan texted me with some facts and said, this is so bad, ... The Bills have attempted one pass to a wide receiver in the first half. And that's basically was like the highlight of the Bills season, being in first place. And that was the reaction I got. So that pretty much sums up the NFL for you in a nutshell, that it was just horribly bad. In college football, it just keeps getting better. It's just the level of play, the technology, how awesome these kids are coming in at 18 years old. The sport is just on the way up, and it's obvious that the NFL is on the way down. Everybody's welcome to come on over and officially say this is the best sport, because me and Tom and Ryan, we've been saying it for years. Me and Tom invented a board game in 1988. We loved college football so much, okay?
I forgot about that. Yeah, we had a thing that you flick to kick field goals.
We're going to make one next year, the 30th anniversary, so we can make the 30th anniversary edition, and we'll auction it off to the 7 Take the Points listeners. So you have a 13% chance to take – 14% chance, see your odds increased, of taking home the 30th anniversary game, which we have no name for, but will for next year.
All right. Well, on that note, the website is takethepoints.net. The Take the Points College Football Podcast is on iTunes, Stitcher, and now officially on Google Play. Tell your friends if you like it, send them over. We would love to have them listen. And there's no Take the Point social media, but Dan, Ryan, and I individually are all on Twitter. If you have questions or send us anything, and we'll answer it on the next show. Until then, we'll see you next week. Bye. Take the point.